Can do.
Can do. Canning it and doing it today. Hi, everybody. This is Alexis Taylor.
Katie Swift.
We've got a really awesome person here today. We've got Heather Goodchild. She's in the living room. She's going to tell us what she does. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Alexis.
Heather, tell us what you do.
That's the hardest first thing.
Yeah.
It's no, not. It's not. That's it's why we the like worst.
It. I think it's a really bad intro.
No, yeah. It's great actually because it makes everything awkward, so it gets it off at a good awkward foot.
You want it to be awkward?
Just to start, yeah.
Why?
Because life is awkward, and being Canadian is awkward.
Fair enough.
And doing things is awkward.
Not always.
Should I say what you do?
No, I can say what I do. Well, Alexis, I'm a visual artist.
Yes.
Working predominantly with textiles.
Yes.
I also work doing installation, ceramics, and various other media. I've done some performance work. And I've most recently, or right now actually, I'm showing at the Textile Museum of Canada.
Yeah.
Until April.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
She's got a lot going on.
Yeah.
You released, I want to say release, but I know that's not the way to put it.
That's what musicians say.
Yeah, I know. But you had two shows, right? You had
concurrent,
one.
Concurrent, yeah. I had one. Well, the one was on a Catherine Mulhern Gallery.
Yeah.
That's finishing this coming weekend.
Whoa.
And at the same time, Textile Museum of Canada. It's a lot to do. And in 2 weeks, I'm flying to Paris.
I know.
Because I got the Canada Council residency there for the winter, and it's pretty exciting.
Oh my gosh.
I'm
so
pretty lucky.
Were you slammed all this fall? Like,
I was pretty slammed.
How do you feel? Exhausted? How do you feel?
I was busy, you know?
Yeah.
It was good. I have a slogan that I'd rather be working.
Yes.
And now that I don't have that excuse, there's too many parties to go to. It's the festive season. It's Christmas.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, you can't say, oh, my shows are coming up because they're on.
Yeah.
So I can't get out of it.
Yeah. Oh, you have right. to go to the, all
I
the parties.
Go to all the events. It's nice.
Are you ready for tomorrow's party?
Oh, you're having a party.
Yeah,
I am looking forward to your party.
Are you gonna wear a dress? What are you gonna wear?
I'm not gonna wear a dress. I'm gonna wear some pleated slacks.
Nice.
Some pleated slacks and some heels.
Beautiful.
I might wear a silk top.
Mm.
And it might have sheer sleeves.
Oh.
So there you go.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that. You were gonna say something, Katie.
I was just going to ask, what is the bulk of the work leading up to a show?
Oh,
is
well.
It collecting your works?
I've been working. I was working on the two shows for at least a year. And in the Textile Museum, I made 3 hooked rugs, which are quite large. And that is very time consuming.
Yeah.
So I was doing that all last winter. I was working on the rugs. But, you know, when the deadline's not so imminent, you're working on things like hooked rugs that take a little longer and you can spend the time and you're relaxed. And then as it came closer to the date, I was working on a series of dolls, large 40-inch high dolls with porcelain heads and hands and armatures and they're posable. And that was kind of more manufacturing because they were all very similar and I could kind of do them assembly line style. So that was really just focusing and working.
And
long
you
hours.
Do it all. You don't have helpers make
you
bits and parts?
I had
or
a wonderful intern from Sheridan College.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Her name was Denneray. Is Denneray? She's still alive, but
yeah.
She's no longer my intern, which is sad.
Right.
Because I'd love to have her all the time.
Yeah,
but she was a huge help, and I really respect the program at Sheridan. I think it's a great program if you want to get into textiles.
I had a friend who took that program, but she became a photographer and a model instead.
Instead of a textile artist.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You know.
Yeah.
I'm sure she learned something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, she likes to paint.
And what did you study?
I studied,
on your website,
I studied fashion.
Fashion.
Yeah, I studied fashion at Ryerson. And I had dreams of becoming a costume designer.
You got a BFA
in fashion design. No.
What?
I got a BAA, a Bachelor of Applied Arts.
Oh, I didn't even know that existed.
Well, it's a Ryerson degree.
Arts.
Wow.
Because Ryerson was just coming off of being just a
polytechnic
college.
Yeah.
So it was becoming a new thing. It was a university and it was this weird degree.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got it.
What did you want to do? Costumes for theater
for
or
film.
Movies?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. I did it.
Oh, you did?
I got in there and I worked in film for many years.
Okay.
And I decided that it wasn't for me.
Well. And you worked on, I remember you worked on coincidentally a movie with Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yes, Chicago.
Chicago, yeah.
With Richard Gere.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I didn't interact with the stars.
No.
But I did see them.
Yes.
And I did really enjoy that experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I found the pace and the hierarchy of the film business not really to my liking.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's amazing for all these people coming together for this common goal, and there's just mm-hmm. real camaraderie. But in the end, there's so few people who get to be creative, truly creative, and ultimately it's the director's vision. So mm-hmm. if you want to have your own vision in film, you know, the costume designer has a vision, but then the director can always
oversee it.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
So right. And often the producers will come in because they have the money and just bulldoze everybody.
Right.
So I you know, I worked on other movies. Like Chicago was wonderful, but I worked on other ones where producers would just come in and say, I don't like that. I don't want that.
Right.
She should be sexier. Or she should be more like.
It's not very artistic based.
And
they're just,
not,
yeah.
A lot of it's about money. So yeah. It wasn't for me, you know. An independent
right.
theater film is great, but very little money in it. Thankless mm-hmm. work often, yet very rewarding sometimes.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes you dress a room full of extras, and then you watch the movie and you think, well, they could have all been wearing
right.
sweatsuits. It wouldn't matter,
right?
Because they're just blurry.
Right.
It doesn't matter, but you don't know, right? And the director doesn't really know. He hasn't decided, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to make everybody perfect.
Right.
And yeah, you're really creating a world, which is.
So you were like 21 running around doing that?
I was in it, you know, I graduated in 2000, and I was in it for quite a few years. TV shows I worked on, maybe 4 years in total.
Mm-hmm.
Were you here in Toronto?
Yeah,
the whole
Toronto.
Time?
And driving around in the cars and buying shoes last minute.
But you were
panicking.
Doing your individual art at the same time?
You know, I wasn't. I feel like the film work got me to do the art because I was so unfulfilled doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed sort of a creative outlet. So I started making things, not with any intention of being an artist and showing, just sort of to do something. Because at work, I was basically driving people around and ironing or steaming, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe mm-hmm. if I was lucky.
Huh.
Right?
Usually just getting lunch, you know, filling the car with gas, getting the coffee. That's what you do at the lower level in film.
Yeah.
And
what were those first pieces? I mean, were they dolls?
They were these felt wall hangings of women's faces, and I was really inspired by folk music back then. So they were all sort of narrative pieces describing these songs.
Hmm. And are those like those women that I've seen, like
yeah.
the pieces? Okay.
Yeah, and they're all based on sort of folk murder ballads, and I was really interested in that idea. And then actually Doug Paisley,
mm-hmm.
our mutual friend,
mm-hmm.
and I put on a show that was both music and these portraits. And we had 9 women musicians come in, and I had 9 portraits, and each of the women sang one of the murder ballads that I had illustrated, and
wow.
And then they sang their own song.
Oh my gosh.
And it was the most wonderful night, and it was kind of magic, because like all these talented musicians did it, like Amy Millan was there,
right.
and like all these people.
Wow.
You know, country, blues, like all these different genres, and it was super hot in the gallery, and it was just like kind of this magic evening that never happened again.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. And people still talk about it. They're like, oh, well, this show, because whenever I have a show, they're like, oh, this show's good, but remember that show you
oh,
did
wow.
with the musicians?
Oh, my gosh.
So it's kind of like I've never lived up to it. And it was before Doug was even recording.
Right.
You know, this is a long time. This is 2002.
Right.
2002. So, yeah, 2 years after graduating, I was already sort of showing.
Doing your
sort
stuff.
Of. I mean, that was the first time, and I was... You know, I wasn't like, I'm an artist. I was like, oh, I'm just going to do this event that relates
right.
mm-hmm.
to these things I'm doing. And I was living with an artist in sort of a house, you know, with many, many people, many roommates, Balint Zacco. And he
oh, yes.
was the son of 2 artists, and he was an artist. And he was working all the time on his art, and he was so dedicated, and he was so focused. And I never really thought about that as a opportunity, as a career path. I'd always, you know,
right.
been discouraged, and I was like, oh. But to see this man who was an artist and who knew our, like, his parents, he knew this way, and he was doing it, and he was very encouraging. He's like, Heather, why don't you...
It was inspiring.
It was very inspiring. Mm-hmm. He's like, why don't you show these things you're making in your room?
Wow.
And then I was like, So this you know, this household I lived in was very, very supportive.
Is that the Borden Street
That's
house?
That's the Borden Street house,
right.
Yeah.
We were talking about that recently.
Yeah.
Interlude. These two pieces that are over Heather were done by Heather.
Yes. I did not know that until I was looking at your stuff online
and
today.
And then you just recognized it.
And I was like, they're in this room.
Yeah.
And at the Common, that's yours.
Yeah, I'd rather the Common, I'd rather be working poster.
Yes. I always noticed that. I always.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Oh, yeah, coffee
shop,
sorry.
I really touched they have it up. Makes me really
Oh, my God, I love it.
You know, I have one of those posters, but I should frame it, too. I love that.
You should just put it up.
Yeah.
It's just newsprint. Just throw it up.
Yeah. Did those come from that event of making things that you were a
part
of?
A lot of them did. That project kind of started with Trampoline Hall, actually, the lecture series.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll do a set for Trampoline Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And my first set was I was renovating my house, and I was really busy, and I was like, oh, I have to do this set. I didn't have time, and I didn't know what to do, and so I love silk screening because I just love the sort of repetitive process of it. I love how this little stack of paper turns into like things all over the floor, and I think it's a really beautiful, fun process. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, wouldn't it be amazing if I was silk screening on stage and the stage started totally empty, and then by the end of the night, the whole stage was covered with the posters, right? So Misha, who hosts, said, well, Heather, you can't do it while the people are lecturing because you'll be too distracting, which I agreed.
Mm-hmm.
But he let me do it while he was up and during the intermission and before and after.
Right.
So I silk screened all night, and that was the first time I made the I'd Rather Be Working posters because I was wanting to be working on my house with the renovating.
Oh, but you had to.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
And then I was kind of working on stage, and then I also kind of thought, you know, like sometimes you get dragged to an event and you don't really want to be there because you have something else to do at home and you're busy.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, ugh. So I was also kind of directing it at people in the audience who were like, oh my God, why am I still here?
Nice. Right,
why
right.
I'm still here. And
I agreed to come.
Waiting.
Yeah.
You know, trampoline is a wonderful evening.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
It's really fun. But sometimes, like, the questions go on for too long.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And you're like, what? So that's where it started. And then wherever they went, they had such a different flavor. It's just such a great phrase in a way.
I know.
I'm
really
happy with it. So then when I did the residency at the AGO and we did the big Nuit Blanche project where we had people making stools and people making jackets,
I was
and people
in that.
Making mugs,
right.
And like
it was a big factory
and people
room.
Were singing, and it was kind of to show the audience the work that goes into the objects they use in their daily life.
Yeah.
And I thought, let's make the posters. I'd rather be working posters. Kind of like, you know, people manufacturing in Canada, how it's so sad that it's all gone and you can't have these jobs where you make things and like making things is so fulfilling, and how people can't even make things anymore in a normal way. They have to be automated because then otherwise they won't make any money.
Yeah.
It's just the whole process of making things has gone to the dogs. You know, it's like all the joy has been taken out of it by the sort of
factories. Well, I mean,
like there's factories. Like, you know, I was working at that ceramic studio, and Alex Wajali, who makes ceramics, he does, you know, he does an assembly line. Like, he makes a lot, but it's smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the assembly line is great, and it works, but then it's gotten so big, and there's so many machines and robots that, and I get it, but they can make things for so little money that you can't, unless it's a specific artisanal piece, like it's like special.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, that's just the way it's gone. There's nothing you can do about it.
What is that human thing, like you say, like obviously it is a completely different experience from operating a machine to like actually manipulating
actually
an object.
Yeah.
Is it the changing the transformation of an object from one form to another, like in your own hands?
I think so.
That's
think
a thrill.
The, I think
or
it's the like taking of things, because you know, I used to sort of make clothes in a assembly line way, and it's taking like a material that's nothing and flat, say for example for fabric, and then all of a sudden it becomes this three-dimensional thing,
right?
And you made it,
right?
And it's really exciting.
And you can inhabit it.
Yeah, like you can give it away. You can share it. You can sell it. You can.
Like, yeah, right.
And there's something really nice about that as a job.
Right.
I think. And I think that when the job, this job that so many people did for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Like making of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Has really gone away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's disappearing. I mean, people are still making things, of course.
Yeah.
But they're being made in such a different way. And they're so removed from our lives.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the point of that show with the AGO, was to sort of draw people into the making process and for them to look at, like, the mug in their hand and be like, oh, yeah, like, someone had to put that handle.
Right.
On. They were making mugs, like, created in front of everybody. Yeah. And right. Everybody, yeah. And it was a porcelain? Ceramic?
Yeah, it was porcelain.
Porcelain.
It was
mug porcelain. Would come out.
I mean, they weren't fired. The mugs, no. We kind of had to cheat it. But with the stools, like, they were done. And then
stools.
Oh, yeah.
After the stools were made, like, everyone was sitting on them. And
yeah.
The great thing about that show was that people really wanted to buy this stuff, but then it wasn't for sale.
Yeah.
And it made people mad.
That would make me mad.
Oh,
because totally
they wanted to claim. They wanted to own the object. Yeah.
So we were giving away the posters. They could take them away for free.
Right. Right. It's a souvenir from such a cool event.
Yeah. They wanted to buy it.
And the guys looked so hot making the stools.
Oh, my God. They were so
I can imagine.
Bending the tubes.
Yeah.
Oh, my
we
God.
We had some ladies making stools, too, like this.
Well, I only remember
she's on that map.
There was a particular man.
Yeah. Our good friend Joel with his large shoulders.
Joel definitely has a superhero physique. He looked great.
Yeah.
Well, that actually leads into the thing I was wondering about. It seems to tap into some ancient thing, the making of objects or necessary life objects, like you say, like it's a modern thing now that we have to remind ourselves that this a person made this or a person was involved in the machine that made it or whatever. But even this like sexiness of a man like creating something, I don't know, how far does that go back? Is that like a caveman thing or is that in our DNA of like that's a providing life giving necessary tool to create?
To see someone capable is to respect them, I think. You see,
woman
who can, you know, whatever.
Well, women who make clothes, it's always like really hit something in me. I'm just like, oh, that's a real
skill. Yeah,
it's a survival.
Even, you know, people they put up curtains, they paint their rooms.
Yes.
All of a sudden, you're like, oh my God, my friend just did this amazing thing.
Yeah.
And you there's this respect associated with it.
Okay, so you went to fashion school and then you became a visual artist doing your own work, doing your own shows.
Exactly.
And that's what you do now? So.
That's what I do now. I mean, it, sort of in the interim, after sort of quitting feature film and all that, I did work in puppets for quite a while while doing art shows. I would do an art show and then I would do a puppet contract and then I would kind of flip back and forth just to make the money, you know? Now I work only on my art shows, but every now and then I'll do a little contract for somebody, you know, if it's a great project and, you know, it's, of
you
course.
You worked for Evan every
now
and then.
Yeah, I worked for Evan Penny for a while doing clothes for his sculptures.
Oh, yes, yes, right.
But I, you know, I'm not getting by on sales. I'm getting by on sales plus grants from the Ontario Arts Council and the Toronto Arts Council.
Oh.
Which are excellent institutions. So it's interesting that, you know, you could say I'm, you know, a career artist.
Very successful artist.
And I would love to be supporting myself strictly from sales, but, you know, these institutions are allowing me to sort of go deeper into my work and also to make work that maybe isn't for sale. Like my past two shows, I've done big installation pieces that really couldn't be purchased by an independent collector. I mean, they could, but, you know, they're more pieces that are for an institution. So in order to, like, be brave enough to make these bigger, you know, less, not consumerist, you know, purchasable.
Commercial
pieces. You know, it's not like I did a lot of dioramas before. It's on the wall. It's in a box. You can take it home and hang it on your wall.
Yeah,
you can totally
dioramas
buy it.
Are cool, yeah.
But now, like, I, you know, I exploded the diorama. It's bigger. It's in a room. You can't.
Right.
So that's the great thing about these institutions, that it provides artists with a bit of a safety net so they can experiment and go further.
Wow, right. Mm-hmm. Your last show, I was in the diorama.
Yeah.
She did this great piece with dolls and a stage and somebody being hung. No.
Was there one somebody being hung? Which one was that? That was the one with
the textile museum, you know, with the stage.
Yeah, with the stage. No, someone with, well, it was Cain and Abel.
Oh, right.
And there was a theater tech person up top, and she was also kind of playing God, and she had the hangman's rope, but there was no noose.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
It was kind of implying the death of Cain, but not being so like, it's the hangman's.
How big were the dioramas?
Well, it was like 10 feet insulation. Tall, you know?
So,
huge.
Like, just in theory, like, I'm like big, in the diorama now. She used to make small dioramas, and now she's doing full rooms.
So, you can, like, go into it and you can interact. And the dolls are like, 3 feet high.
They're like children.
So, they are the height of children, but they're the proportions of adults, which is a weird scale.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. It's weird.
It is.
Which I like, because it's not human scale. It's like.
Oh, totally. Like you're in a dream, totally. Right. Right.
Right.
It's the feeling I wanted to kind of evoke.
But you can walk in amongst.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. It was really cool.
Shoot, I forget the name of the artist, but they had an installation at TIFF at Bell Lightbox that were large, like life-size dioramas. It had a lot to do with First Nations and colonialism. Stuff.
Oh, that was probably.
But I was so, like, I loved seeing people that looked like people. They were like giant, giant, giant dolls.
Mm-hmm.
But the desire to go into them, to walk in amongst them and touch them and stuff is so strong just because they're like as big as you, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know if stuff is smaller, it's more delicate, you can observe. But there's something about the size that just made me want to like walk into it so much. So I can see that would be a satisfying
and be
experience.
A part of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to want to see if we can find out where your artistic bone came from, Heather. Like, let's go back to you.
When you said
up.
your roommate had artistic parents, that seemed to be something that really resonated with you, that he had knowledge.
That, it was more that he. Saw it as a potential
job.
Career,
yeah,
a job.
Right.
He saw it as a job.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that I'd never experienced.
Not a hobby.
A 9-to-5. You know, I work all day.
Working on his art. I see.
He was so dedicated, and he was so seeing it as, you know, what he was meant to do all day, as opposed to like, I'm gonna do the little bit. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was serious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Serious artist.
I liked that.
But I want. I'm no actually more like. Factually, like you grew up where I want to go take it back to where you grew up and when you started making shit and you know, what shit were you making? And I want to say shit one more time. I have a feeling you were doing dioramas back then. You were probably always making clothes, obviously.
I was always making clothes. Yeah, I was always a crafter as a kid.
Yeah, you always crafty.
Yeah.
Are your parents artistic? Your dad builds things.
Yeah, they're very artistic. They're
Back in action. What's the name of that artist, guys?
Kent Monkman.
Monkman.
We remembered.
Of the Monk, not to be confused with Monk, the TV series based on a fellow.
Tony Shalhoub.
Who, what does he do? He, like, senses crime?
I've never seen it.
Predicts the crime. Okay. All right. Okay, Heather.
Okay.
Back to the
beginning. Tell me where you were born, where you were raised, all that stuff.
Well, I was born in Toronto.
Oh.
And I was raised in the Beaches, now known as the Beach.
Yes.
Yeah.
But in the 80s, it was the Beaches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I like to refer to it still as the Beaches.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Aurora, Ontario, which is in York Region, when I was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived there until I went to university at Ryerson. So I've never really left.
Yeah.
What is Aurora? What is the population?
The population then was around 24,000. Now it's quite a bit larger. I think it's more like 45 or 50.
Okay.
It is a bedroom community. It's the bedroom of Toronto. When I lived there, there was nothing. Absolutely nothing. But there were two high schools. And one was for sort of tougher kids, sportier kids.
Yeah.
You know?
That's where you went.
No.
I know, I'm joking.
You're joking. And the other one, Aurora High, is where I went. And everyone was very nice. And I feel because of that, I was sort of allowed to blossom into the eccentric person that I kind of was. I wonder if I'd stayed in the city and I'd gone to sort of a...
Uh-huh.
You know, I wonder if I would have been the same person. Because I was really, you know, it was such a nice environment. And like, I hated Aurora, and I was always going to the city, and I resented being in this suburban, ugly town. But at the same time, I feel like the fact that the school was so nice.
Wow.
Everything supportive. Was so nice, you know?
Positive.
There were no bullies. There was no...
Wow.
You know, it was just... Because they were all at the other school. Right. It was just a bunch of nerds, you know? It was wonderful.
So was interests differentiation? It wasn't just like where you lived, you went to a different high school?
No, it wasn't where you lived. I think you chose it. You chose your school.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And the sort of nerdier kids went to the one school, and the kids who were more interested in sports or... I'm not sure. I never went there.
Right.
You just didn't go there. We never interacted. Nice. It was very strange.
Do you know if there were different courses, like more arts courses at your school? Right. You didn't go there.
I didn't go there. I didn't ask.
So you were always into art then, basically, in school?
I was into art, but I was really also into science.
Oh.
I was really interested in science, and I thought about going into science.
Oh.
But it was a really tough call for me. What to do? Because I did really well in science, you know.
Like, you did science all the way up through high school?
Yeah, I did science all the way through.
Oh, wow.
You know, and math. So what were you? Algebra, and I loved the algebra and the geometry.
Well, that explains why you're so good at measuring and cutting. And
yeah, and I mean, measuring is an sewing. Important part of sewing. So.
Yeah.
But I really did want to pursue art, and I did apply to art schools as well as the fashion school.
Did you, were you considering a career in science somehow?
Well, I mean, I did it all the way to the end. I must have been on some level.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Thinking about it. I was in the drama club as well.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So tell me. Acting. Yeah, I want to hear about your acting. I really want to hear about the shows you were in. I also want to hear about the clothes that you wore.
Are you sure?
Yes. That's basically going to be my favorite part of this interview.
Well, because it was such like a nice environment, I feel very free to wear whatever I wanted to. And I probably would have in a different environment as well, but who knows. So I definitely raided my childhood costume box initially. This is probably in grade 7 I started.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of just decided that I was going to wear whatever I wanted to wear. You know, grunge was coming in.
Yep.
It was the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sort of, you know, like in the early 90s, that dance craze sort of, late 80s, early 90s thing, like that was sort of going out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started getting medieval. Really, really medieval.
Yeah, she went medieval.
Mm-hmm. I went super medieval.
So was that mostly black?
Purple. No, it was mostly velvet, actually. I wore a lot of velvet, and I wore a lot of white blousy shirts.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a throwback to 83 in a way.
Oh,
you know,
kind
of like that a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of vests,
mm-hmm.
a lot of sort of half capes, cape vests, long, you know, I wore a cape as a coat, for sure. That's what I wore. And, you know, still, but a lot of ripped jeans.
Katie and my face school. Right now look like we're in awe.
And then I had some very decorative velvet items that I would go to Kensington Market and buy, and I'd go to it used to be the old clothing show that used to happen at exhibition.
Oh, yeah.
And that was really, like, the time to go. And you'd get so excited. We'd all come down from the suburbs and go to that. And back then, you could fill bags.
That show used to be great. It's not good now.
It used to be
now.
Amazing. No, it's over now.
Yeah.
And I used to find the weirdest stuff. I'd wear, you know, 1940s stuff. I'd wear whatever.
And really. You're at what age is right now? Like, you're talking about?
This is, like... Starting in grade 7 all the way through.
Oh, right. And what about this thing? Didn't you refuse to wear pants?
Well, that was earlier.
Yeah, talk to me about that.
Readjust or relaxation. Get close to your mouth, okay? That's what he said.
Good. You're perverted, Alexis.
You're sick.
Yeah, it's fun.
Okay, so tell us about skirts.
Well, I didn't wear pants, I think, until I was 11.
At all?
No. I just wouldn't. I didn't want to.
Is that because you're just like old-timey? You're just
something old-timey. I was pretty old-timey. I was really into dresses.
Yeah.
And I just thought that pants were for boys. And then it was wrong for women to wear, for girls to wear.
Oh, you're like a Mennonite.
Yeah.
No, not a Mennonite. Well, kind of, but also a Mormon.
But that was a notion you came up with by yourself as a kid.
I just completely felt if I wore pants, then I would be a boy. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah. That was my idea.
And your parents just went with it?
Well, they had to. I was very stubborn about it. It was the only thing I was stubborn about. I was a pretty good kid, except for the pant issue.
And you'd play in the snow?
Yeah, no, I had snow. I did wear snow pants.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But it was very uncomfortable because I would have tights on and a skirt. And then the skirt would be bunched up in the snow pants. There's pictures of me cross-country skiing in, like, a trench coat to accommodate the dresses.
You know? That's amazing.
It sounds like my parents were really indulgent, but they really weren't.
Right.
You know, this is just the way it was. Mm-hmm. I did wear, in the 80s, I remember wearing leggings. You know, I'd wear leggings and, like, an oversized sweatshirt, because that was the look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a good look. Yeah.
But the oversized sweatshirt was kind of like a dress. You know, so I was cool with that look. And then for a while, I would wear pants that didn't have a zipper in the front because I thought the zipper was perverted. I really did. I thought it was totally disgusting.
Well, then what would you want? Buttons?
No, I would just wear something with like an elastic waist.
Oh, yeah. So you thought like access to the genitals was perverted.
I wasn't thinking along those lines.
Right.
It was more the visual look of the fly. I thought
because
it
brought attention to the area.
Do you know, speaking of that, I remember when I was like a kid, you know how your jeans would kind of, at least back then, they would bunch up and it looked like you have a little, like a little dick. Like
yes.
A little, like, almost like a little curled up boner.
Really embarrassed about
I remember being weirded out by that.
Well, yeah, the jeans were different.
Yeah, they were.
They were definitely, they had a different bagginess and they were higher. And yeah, they had that lump.
Edwins. Remember those? They were bubble.
Yeah, the Edwins.
Bubble butt jeans.
And then I remember, you know, I started wearing jeans because I thought, okay, this is fine. It was acceptable to wear jeans for me all of a sudden. I think this is around the time I started dressing in the medieval clothes. I accepted jeans. Hmm. I was getting really into fashion, too. So
yeah.
You know what? But I remember when the people would cut off the covering of the buttons on the button fly on the 501s.
Oh, uh-huh.
Like
yes.
Trend. They would, like, cut off.
Yeah. So the buttons
so
were exposed?
So you could see the buttons.
Yes, yes.
I thought that was perverted, too. I didn't like that.
Wow.
I didn't approve.
I remember when my people in high school and the older kids cut off the red tag of their Levi's. Because suddenly, like, a name brand, like, name brand was everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just, like, just having that little red tag was, like, so shameful. You couldn't, and you had to, like, what's that thing where you hook the threading out of the Guess jeans triangle? Like, you couldn't have any.
Yeah.
You get a.
And my mom was so mad. She was like, "You wanted Guess jeans." And then the next year, I was like, taking the label off. She's like, "What's the point? Could have gone to Byway."
That's like, not true, though. They wouldn't have.
Different.
Yeah.
Different fit.
I like to take off the Gap labels.
Don't brand me.
Yeah, don't brand me.
Yeah.
Remember? Oh, in university, the best one was people had backpacks and they, their North Face backpacks, and they hooked out the RTH. No face.
Oh.
I don't remember that.
I've never heard of that.
Do you remember that you could not wear a backpack on both shoulders?
Oh, yes. That was so nerdy.
Now that, I think there's a whole generation.
That is amazing.
With crooked backs.
Yes. Oh, no doubt. I don't doubt that at all.
It does look cooler, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You just couldn't. You couldn't even think about doing it.
No, you couldn't even.
I mean, it just wasn't even an option.
No.
There was no point for the other strap. You're like.
I remember if you even did, like, in your own perverted bedroom, like, just, like, put it on, it would be, like, because it was so stretched out.
Oh.
Yeah,
be like,
it was totally
so uneven.
On one
yeah,
side.
Yeah.
And it was always those green canvas bags with, like, the leather edging.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Or would they be tan as well? No, it's usually green.
It's usually, like, a green or a tan.
I can't believe we did that. All for
and
coolness.
I would wear the backpack on the one shoulder, but then I was wearing a cape so that my arm wouldn't go through, right? It was so weird. This is what teenagers do with fashion.
Did you have friends who gathered around you and dressed like you?
No,
or did were you very flying on your own?
I was
pretty
much flying on my own, but I had many sort of groups of people who I would associate with, all in different years. Like, I had the drama kids who I would associate with, and then I had sort of the science people. So I would really move around a lot.
Hmm.
I really was kind of on my own, but I was a part of many groups.
I kind of did that
groups.
Too.
Yeah,
I didn't want to be.
Yeah, me
one
too.
Group.
I did that.
Tell us what shows you did.
In school.
Plays.
Well, we did quite a few, and in the beginning, I was just doing the costumes and the sets, and and I just took over that. I just did the, you know, the after school plays.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one I was in was an Agatha Christie murder mystery, and I was the secretary, and I was so nervous because I'd never been on stage, and I was so shy in many ways. But I had a really great dress, and I did all the costumes, and mine was the best, of course.
Aww.
And this hairstylist in town, in Aurora, agreed to do all our hair, and she did such a beautiful job.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing. And, you know, it really
makes a difference.
Yes.
It's so exciting for us.
Yeah.
It's just such a nice thing to do.
It's a real show.
You know, for a high school play.
Yeah.
So that was great. And, you know, it was hilarious. And then later we did this play that actually the drama teacher wrote, and it was an adaptation of Much Ado About Nothing. And it was sort of about a high school drama group putting on Much Ado About Nothing.
Nice. Meta.
Yeah. Hilarious. Mm-hmm. And in it, I had to slap. I was Beatrice.
Oh, my gosh.
I was cast as Beatrice because she was played by this kind of eccentric person.
You're very Beatrice.
And I was really mad because I wanted to do the costumes. And so I ended up doing it all. And I think my studies suffered a little bit.
Oh my gosh, you did the costumes and you did your part as Beatrice.
Yeah, and I wanted to make all these medieval costumes, of course, right? You know, I was so excited about doing the costumes. And then I'm like, oh, I have to play the leading role as well? What?
Oh my gosh.
Give me a break.
Did you have to kiss a guy in that?
Well, that's the thing. I was supposed to kiss the guy, but then I didn't want to.
Oh, so you told me this.
Yeah.
So you just wouldn't?
Yeah, I just wouldn't. So I just wouldn't. I didn't want to.
Yeah, he was perverted.
Well, no, but I just didn't want to.
Yeah.
I was, you know, not interested.
Yeah.
In doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of, like, skirted out of it, and I was in kind of in trouble about it.
The kissing?
Well, no, because the director really wanted me to kiss the guy. And
oh,
I
shoot. Come on.
I wouldn't
don't pressure.
Do it.
That's weird.
Well, how old are you? Like, 15?
Yeah, but, you know.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't do it.
That's okay.
Anyways, I had to slap another guy in it, and the director was really into me slapping the guy for real, which I think is not really appropriate for a high school production.
Maybe not.
I had really bad aim. Like, I was really bad at slapping. So the drama teacher had me slap him for practice, and I thought,
oh my gosh.
Wait a minute, this is weird.
Oh,
you know,
he wants the real contact, yeah.
He wanted some, I don't know, maybe not, maybe he was just,
yeah. Into, like, real theater.
Maybe
real theater. Yeah. But, in the end, I learned how to slap, and I guess I was so nervous that I really hit the guy hard, and then he forgot his lines, and I felt
oh my gosh.
And I hit him in the ear. It was like, it was a disaster all around, but the costumes looked great.
Wow.
So that was my
that's
was my
the
great,
argument for the stage
that
slap.
Was my greatest role as an actor, and it was kind of a major failure, but it was fun. It was really fun. And then I wrote a play actually in high school, and we put it on. It was called The Bus Stop, and it was about leaving a suburban town. It was really funny.
That sounds awesome.
I wish I could see it. It was so ridiculous. And you have that energy as a teenager where you think you can do anything.
Yeah.
I put on a renegade fashion show.
Oh.
I just took over the auditorium. I didn't even ask. As
wow.
As a teenager, you can do that kind of thing.
Or you can do that
so
kind of
awesome.
Thing.
Awesome.
Because they had a fashion show every year, and they wouldn't let me do a scene. They said, well, you can give us clothes, and we'll use your clothes, but we'll direct the scene.
Right.
And I wasn't going to have any of that. So I'm like, fine, I'll do my own fashion show. And it had sword fighting,
oh,
and it had body
God.
Painting.
What?
And it had, like,
you're so
chains.
Creative.
It was crazy. It was really fun. We had a really good time doing it. It was short. It was, like,
oh
more
gosh.
Like a performance piece.
Right, performance art.
Yeah, it was performance art.
Did you have fashion shows in your high school, Katie?
No, just for prom.
I always thought it was odd we had them in mind that, like, the girls
mom.
Who tried out
yeah.
for it, I was always like, you know, you're trying out to be a model, and that seems a little bit egotistical.
Shallow. And you judged them.
I did.
You judged them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fashion show was
Keep
weird.
Talking.
Yeah.
It was basically, like, they'd go to the mall, and the stores would donate, like, loan them clothes.
Yeah, that's what the prom show
was. Oh, I didn't even know how they did it at my high school.
And then they had the fashion show.
Is that what it was?
I guess so.
Maybe that's how it worked in my high school. I don't even know.
But I was pretty worked up about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then you went to Ryerson. And did you consider other schools?
I did. I considered Queens for art.
Oh, okay.
And I considered York mm-hmm. for art. And I did get into both, which mm-hmm. is exciting. But I decided that fashion would be more practical.
Yeah.
You know.
Probably was.
I'm a pretty practical family, and I thought. And it did provide me with a lot of business training that has been useful.
Yeah.
So, that's good. But I didn't want to go to OCAD because it wasn't a university then, and I was a snob.
Right.
I was a total snob about college, which is maybe not the best thing, but...
maybe our generation, or in our parents' generation. I know my parents wanted me to go to university.
You have to go to university.
Yeah.
University.
Yeah.
And in the end, you know, I think that Ryerson was better training for life because they were very hard.
Oh.
And they were very, like... It was training. You were learning to sew. You were learning. We'd had a very stringent design course that was grueling.
Huh.
And I think that was really good. And I don't know if OCAD, knowing OCAD students, if they had that kind of grueling, sort of rigid training in the basics.
Right.
You know, my color, like, we did a lot of color theory.
Right.
You know that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Design, color theory, how to print like an architect. That kind of stuff.
Right.
And I think at an art school you wouldn't have gotten so much sort of design. Well, I mean, they have a design wing at OCAD, so I have no idea what goes on there.
Yeah, now. But yeah. Back then, that was your impression.
That seemed to be my impression.
Yeah.
That it was a little looser.
Mm-hmm.
That they were still kind of riding that, just express yourself. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you need to learn how to paint before you can express anything.
That's a comparison with a lot of different theater schools, actually, too. Right. It's just like... There are technical, practical skills that you can learn.
Yeah.
And it's not all about, like, therapy.
Right.
Or, you know, finding your voice or expression. Like, there are some really, like, technical stuff.
Too. Yeah.
But I think a blend of both is good. Could be good.
I just wanted to ask you, would you call yourself, like, a folk artist?
Well, I wouldn't, because I'm aware... of the art world in a pretty real way.
Right.
I'm, you know, in the art world all the time. I'm going to people's shows. Yeah. I know what's going on. I've read the books. I'm really, like, I know art history.
Yeah.
I think what you're asking is, am I an outsider artist? Like, an outsider artist would be someone who does folk art.
Okay.
On their own, who is doing it out of passion alone. They're not...
I was actually thinking, like, I don't actually know that much about visual art, so, but I was actually just thinking in the style, because sometimes the way you draw and things you make.
I'm drawing on folk art.
Right, that's what I meant, actually. Okay, that's your inspiration.
I'm influenced by it, right. For sure, but I think, like, to be a true folk artist, you kind of have to be working in, either working in a very strict tradition that mm-hmm. you're just repeating.
Okay.
You know, you've been taught this and this is what you're doing. You're not trying to innovate. You're not trying to change.
Okay.
You're not trying to comment. You're just doing this kind of folk art. Or you're an outsider artist and you're expressing yourself, but in a way that you're not trying to be part of the art world.
Okay.
So, but I am trying to be part of the art world. So.
Yes, of course.
But I'm using all these things, for sure, in my work.
Like, and one almost couldn't call themselves a folk artist, like, that's all something other people call you. Yeah. Or.
Well, I mean, say there's someone making decoys.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, they're a folk artist. Uh-huh. They're working in a tradition. They're making things that have been made for hundreds of years, and they're making them in the same way.
Right.
Right.
And they're, you know, they're craftsmen, and they're using their artistic eye to make beautiful things, but they're not, you know, changing them and subverting them and presenting them in a gallery in a different way.
Right.
Do you have a favorite source you go to for inspiration?
I think that inspiration can come from anywhere.
Right.
And I feel like with inspiration, you kind of, like, have to get filled up through many ways.
Okay.
You know, could be just meeting someone, could be seeing a show, could be seeing even, like, some fabric that you like. And then it's like, when you're full of inspiration, then things start happening. But if you don't have enough, if you're depleted, then it's almost like you've had a fire, the fire's gone down, there's only ashes, so then it's really hard to, like,
get the fire going.
Because I feel like with ideas, for me in the visual arts, like, they kind of just come out of the ether. And you're like, oh, this is what I'm going to do.
Right. Like something strikes you in a moment.
Yeah, it's not like, I'm like, okay, I'm going to make my plan.
Uh-huh.
Okay. You know? Yeah, yeah.
Can't really force it too much.
And how do you, is it like an idea strikes you and then you take action? Or do you ever just take action and see what occurs from moving stuff around? Or do you usually have like a bit of an idea before you start with materials? Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Right.
And then more literally, you actually do love, you seem to love antique photographs.
Well, I do love looking at the faces of the past. I used to use antique photographs in my work to, you know, copy them and find the history of the women. But I feel like I've moved a little bit away from that.
Yeah.
And that I'm sort of more interested in representing, rather than this one woman's story and like putting it so much in a historic context, I'm more interested in having sort of an emotional context and having images that can strike people not so much within a certain era.
Okay.
Because the photographs really place you in this Victorian, Edwardian, whatever era. And I feel like often for people, some people, that restricts their interest in it, immersion into it. And so now I'm much more interested in making things a little more open-ended, less sort of, you know, this is this Victorian past
right.
that I'm playing with and
right.
taking these characters from this. I just want to make it, you know, maybe it's a little from the Renaissance and maybe it's from the future.
Right.
Maybe it's, you know,
okay,
just so it's a little less strict. But still, I mean, I do love looking at faces from the past.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Such stories behind the eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it brings it to like that is just a person, like
it's totally,
everybody
it's
was and is or could
and
be.
The thing about those photos is that the people sat for longer and they were so much more staged that I feel like you gain a lot more of their personality.
Huh.
Through looking, you know, because they sat there
for
and
so
looked,
long,
and I feel like it captures more of their soul in a way.
And they're probably having more continuous thoughts. Like
exactly,
you just pose for a moment, but
oh,
you might be like, you might be like,
thoughts.
Being
yeah,
that.
Even if it's just for a second. And I think if you even see now long exposure photographs, it has a bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you can see the person more.
Person
snapshot.
Being,
yeah,
and not presenting.
I mean, they're
as much.
Settled in there.
Yes, right.
Composed.
Oh yes, that is so.
Speaking
beautiful.
Of that, I met a fellow that did a tintype of you.
Yeah.
Did you have to sit a long time for that?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What is cool. a tintype?
Tintype was a very early photographic technique, and it used a silver plate, and they could do it like at a fair because. You can use sunlight to expose the plate.
Uh-huh.
And then you could develop it right away and you could take it away with you.
Okay.
So there's no paper, it's just the plate and the photos on the plate. And the best part of the tintype is that the image you see is the same as the image you see in a mirror. So it's reversed. So a lot of people find a tintype to represent their face better because it's the
it's
face
how
you
see yourself.
Wow.
As opposed to the face of the world sees. It's
so people like that portrait of
themselves. Yeah, they like it better than almost some people. They were telling me because I was
amazing.
Talking to them that often people will like it better than any photo they've ever seen.
Oh my gosh, I bet, right.
Because it's like, oh my God, this is
it's
this
my
is
eyes.
How you look.
Yeah, through my eyes.
Yeah. Because you never get to see yourself day to day except maybe in a video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How the world sees you.
Right. Do you have any questions?
Oh, now that we're on this, I feel like I have so many.
Oh,
but
yeah?
It would be too long. I mean, this is so
well,
great.
Well, all
about,
I
like,
had in mind was
making.
Asking you about what you're excited about in Paris, and then I was going to get onto our game. But if you have something you want to ask, you should ask it.
No, I would like to know about Paris, too.
Okay. You excited about Paris? What are you going to do? You're going to be working on your art?
I'm going.
You're going. Okay.
Okay.
It's in 2 weeks and you're probably stressed
out.
Oh,
it's very
soon. She just finished her shows and now you've got
a lot of stuff together.
I've okay.
got a lot to do.
That's
anyway,
great.
She's going to be there for 4 months. It sounds awesome. I wish I could go visit you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
It's going to be wonderful. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, should we get to the game then?
Great.
Okay,
sure.
Great. Okay. This game is called This or That, Heather.
Okay.
And I'm just going to give you like two. It's This or That. I'm going to give you two words, and you just answer on instinct, and if you want to discuss, you can, but we'll try and do it fast.
Okay. Yeah.
Mars or Venus?
Oh, Mars.
Wickham or Darcy?
That's a really good one.
I know.
It is a good, she's really good at coming up.
First I thought Bingley or Darcy, but I was like,
No, but that's what that's really threw me.
Yes. Wickham. You had to think for a second.
I was like, Darcy.
Yeah, it's Darcy.
Yeah,
come
of
on.
Course. You gotta do Bingley or Darcy.
Yeah, I guess.
But everyone's always gonna pick Darcy.
Well, yes.
You never know.
I think there might be some nasty chicks who like a little nasty Wickham.
Wickham's no good.
I know you love Wickham. Darcy. I do too. Parsnip or Carrot?
Carrot.
Neil Young or Bob Dylan?
Bob Dylan.
Movies or films?
Oh, movies.
Okay.
<That's> nice. A weird I like that. Yeah.
Digital or analog?
Analog.
Warhol or Duchamp?
Duchamp.
Herbal or Western medicine?
That's incorrect.
I know. That's
because herbal
it.
Is not
it could have
the
been Eastern or Western.
Yeah.
But I know that you experiment with herbs from your garden.
That's true.
And then when I say Western, I mean like doctors with degrees
like,
and certificates.
Like
but you can do both, right?
Woman when you say Western.
Oh,
that's so awesome.
Why don't,
you can leave it at that.
Let's make your
that's
answer
so
Dr. Queen Medicine.
Yeah, that's
woman.
Way yeah. better.
And she's both.
Western
both.
Medicine.
She's Western medicine.
Cowboy medicine.
Okay.
Or herbs. Edinburgh or Glasgow?
Oh.
Yeah, she loves Scotland.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Glasgow.
Oh, wow.
I like Edinburgh better. But I like the word Glasgow.
Yeah. Glasgow has a nice art gallery. I went to one there.
It does, but I find the streets of Glasgow so cold.
Yeah.
You know?
It's crazy gangs,
lovely
right?
cemetery.
Oh, yeah?
But it's the top place to get knifed or something.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's
the most
dangerous.
And, you know, Edinburgh, you get to wine.
It's gorgeous.
Castles.
Yeah.
I prefer Edinburgh.
Okay, George Jones or Hank Williams?
George Jones.
Rob Ford or George Bush Jr.?
George Bush Jr.
Oh, my gosh.
For sure.
I don't know. I don't know what I would answer.
That is a hard one.
Cotton or wool?
Wool.
Bra or no bra?
Bra.
Bible or Harry Potter?
Oh, that's a good one too, because I like them both. Well, it's the same thing.
Which
same
one
story.
Would you?
Sacrifice.
Okay, so it's the same. You can't choose one?
It's the same.
Yeah.
It's the same story.
Santa Claus or Tooth Fairy?
Santa Claus.
Miami or Berlin?
Ooh.
You like that?
First we take Miami and then we take Berlin.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Okay, that's your answer. That's a good answer.
You're so good at it.
Cake or pie?
You know what? It used to be pie. Now it's cake.
Nice. Yeah, I like cake
yes.
more.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's for us.
I find pie a little bit like too
syrupy. Oh, it's too much. It's too meaty.
Yeah. Vagina knitting or regular knitting?
Regular knitting.
Do you know what vagina knitting is?
No.
Okay, my sister called me tonight.
I don't even want
to
know.
No, I have to tell you because she called me to tell me about vagina knitting and just said, look it up. There's a woman, I don't know where she is, I think she's in Scandinavia, who put a roll of yarn in her vagina. And for an art exhibition, she has been like over weeks knitting something, pulling the yarn out of her vagina. And she's
but
knitting
in
a gallery.
In there
yeah,
the whole time?
Like this roll of, what do you call it?
Wool.
Yes, is in her womb.
Skein.
And when you read about it, actually
in
doesn't seem
womb.
As bizarre as you think. Like, well, I guess it's not in her womb. It's in her vaginal canal or some. I don't really know exactly.
How
but
much wool is in there?
I don't know, but
she's scared
she's
of
been
infection.
Doing it for a long time, guys. So let's go.
I bet it looks amazing.
Traditional.
I think it looks
traditional.
Cool.
Traditional.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What if she gets her period?
Yeah.
Well, I think it would make an interesting stripe.
It'll
really
make
would.
A pretty, right.
Pam streak. Anderson or Kim Kardashian?
Oh, that's interesting. The brunette or the blonde? I don't really have an answer for
have
that.
Have you seen Pam's new hair? It's really short.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah,
oh,
it looks
haven't.
Cute. Okay. You don't have an answer? Okay.
No.
Bill Nye the Science Guy or David Suzuki?
I don't really have a connection with either, but I'll pick Suzuki.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We have a lot more. Sorry. Okay. This is going to take a little while.
Okay.
Pierre Trudeau or JFK?
Pierre Trudeau.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cheers or Frasier?
Frasier.
Cheers is way better
no,
than Frasier.
No. Frasier
I,
is its own special
you know,
thing.
I like that they were.
They're completely
they were
different
in,
vibes.
They're in Seattle.
Was yeah.
Weird, weird cast. Daphne, the dad, and then
yeah.
the two.
Yeah. Frank,
and
Jack Lemmon.
Never
yeah.
happened.
No.
Happened.
It was just in a fancy lob.
Yeah.
A room with
Daphne.
A view or Fight Club.
Room with a view. Although I do like Fight Club.
Yeah. Clowns or mimes?
Mimes.
Time the herb or time, the dimension.
The dimension.
Mm-hmm. Chastity belt or chastity bono.
I don't even know what that means.
That's Cher and Sonny Bono's daughter who Chastity became a man. Bono. Well, who is actually a man, but mm-hmm. is now really fully living like a man.
Chaz now.
Chaz.
Oh, Chaz. Right, Chaz. Your name's Chaz now.
His name isn't Chastity anymore.
No, shoot. No. This question's at work. Forget it.
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah.
Wedding or funeral?
Let's be optimistic.
Great.
Okay, wedding?
Wedding. Let's choose the wedding.
Yeah. Rubber chicken or whoopee cushion?
Rubber chicken.
Kayak or canoe?
I prefer one more aesthetically and one more athletically.
Okay.
So I would probably just say canoe.
Okay. Ancient Rome or ancient Egypt?
Rome.
Brown nipples or pink nipples?
These questions, Alexis, they're so dirty.
Well, I'm not the most mature person I know. Kate or Pippa?
Oh, Kate. Kate for sure. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. True beauty. Upright bass or electric?
Electric.
Oh. Mm. Three-way or four-way? I mean, maybe I should be cutting the perverted ones.
Three-way or four-way what?
Yeah. Sporty Spice or Scary Spice?
Oh, that's a tough one.
It's a tough call. I love posh.
I liked ginger.
Ginger's great.
Yeah, ginger's great.
I picked the two worst ones.
Yeah, these are the hardest. Sporty Spice is pretty nice. Like, I know people who know her.
Yeah, she seems nice. Well, they both seem nice.
Yeah, actually, they seem nice too.
Why do we always say that they seem nice?
They seem nice.
I guess because we should assume people are nice.
I always feel bad for Christine to wear flats.
Who?
Yeah.
Sporty. So let's pick hers.
She had to wear flats? Oh, okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, she had to wear the platform. Yeah. She had to wear the sneaks.
She had to be all boyish.
Yeah.
Marble or stone?
Today, marble.
Okay. Sexy priest or sexy nun? She's not going to answer these.
You kind of need both, don't you?
I guess.
That's good.
Okay. Cremation or burial?
Burial, linen shroud.
Specific.
Really good idea. Mm-hmm. Matisse or Monet?
Monet.
Mo.
Matisse.
Okay, great. Baby or cat?
Cat.
Cocaine or MDMA?
Neither.
Waterworld or Castaway?
I've never seen Waterworld, but I did like Castaway. Mm-hmm. Oh. I really actually enjoyed it. It made me cry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it
was something like bonding with an inanimate object that really resonated with me.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah. Heather
or leather?
Heather.
That's it! Can do!
We did them all!